discuss their... Well, today we got to finish the home optry yet. Mm-hmm. We still have the Sternerica to do.
Yep.
And then we have the Thysanoptera, the Socoptera, and the Theraptera. And like I said, I was hoping we could get through that today, and then that'd be it for the next exam, which, again, I was hoping we could take a week from today, next Tuesday. Are you smiling?
Oh, scale insects. I realize I haven't looked into those. Are those allowed to be counted into our collection?
Oh,
I know.
Yeah.
They can be a bit... Okay.
Yeah, you just... they'd be on a twig or something, or on a leaf, and you have to... You don't put it in alcohol. You just kept bringing a twig with them on it. And
So...
Did you try to take them off and put them in vial of alcohol?
I legitimately just, you know, use my fingernail to peel one off.
Yeah.
I'll just go grab one from Concordia. They're usually on there.
Yeah. Kid, he was smiling about the not wanting to take a test a week from today.
A week from today, but I'm going to do my best.
The thing is if, you know, we've got the Beatles coming up next and say we're already running behind, if we don't keep up, then it's going to get worse and worse and worse. So.
Beatles are kind of a...
I like Beatles. Beatles are good. I'm safe with Beatles.
I like them too. The problem is we'll have to identify them.
Well, I used to have a thing I used to say about the beginning of Beatles, like something like your book has 250 families,
mm-hmm.
and I don't even make you learn, I don't know what it was, half of them or a third of them or something, but still it's just a lot.
You know, 250 families, if we were really good about it, we could, you know, have 250 families and just go off our entire collection as Beatles.
Yeah, I say there are 120 families in North America. You will have to know less than half of that total. But still, 50 or 60 families is a lot. Anyway, so, and it works out for me, too. Like I said, I think I've got a dentist appointment a week from today, first thing in the morning, so I'll be at that. Probably won't get back here till 9 or 9:30, but I can have the exams ready and make sure Jerry gets here to get you started and stuff, and so that actually works out all right for me too. And so, any questions before we get started? We've been going through the Hemiptera in the broad sense, and we've done all the Heteroptera, and now the what was the old Homoptera, we've done the Achenerica, and we're ready to do the Sternerica. And the Sternerica does, well, sterno means sternum, and rinca means beak, and it's referring to the fact that in this group, the beak looks like it arises between the legs even, up on the sternum. It doesn't even look like it's coming off the head. It's so far back. So beak appearing to rise between the prococcyx. And then there's some groups where the mouth parts are lacking altogether. This group is more slow moving and sedentary. Things like aphids and scales. They're not the faster moving things like we saw in the leaf hoppers and things. The antennae are usually long and filiform. Occasionally it's absent, again, in some of the sedentary groups. This is probably, of all the Hemiptera collectively, the Sternerica is probably the most economically important group. It's had lots of aphid pests, lots of scale pests. The phylloxerids are in this group. The whiteflies are in this group. The mealybugs are in this. It's a lot of important pests. Part of the reason is that they are very prolific. They go through a number of generations per year, so they can build up numbers very fast. And another reason they're problematic is that not only can they cause damage from their feeding, but they can also vector diseases and that sort of thing. So it is an important group. There's a number of super families. We're going to go through a few of the families, but then things, they can be really tough. So like when we get to the scales, I'll just talk about the scales in general, and we don't require any families in that. So, but the first family we'll talk about is the psyllidae, or the jumping plant lice. The psyllids, basically, they look like miniature cicadas to me. Just looks like a general form and shape like a cicada, except they're little tiny things. Like I said, they are small, only 2 to 5 millimeters in length. They have 3 ocelli. The front wings are membranous and thicker than the hind wings. They tend to hold their wings roof-like over their backs. Their antennae are 5 to 10 segmented, but usually 10. They often have this kind of Y-shaped suture on the vertex. You can kind of see it going here and then kind of going out. So, but they'll be right down the middle of the head. There'll be a suture and then it kind of flares forward. So kind of a Y shape. We'll see this also later when we get to the Psychoptera. Tarsi are 2-segmented. In this group, the hind legs are somewhat modified for jumping. They're not strong jumpers, but they can jump a little bit. There's a few species that can exude a waxy secretion, kind of like the waxy aphids that we'll get to in a little bit, the area of somatids. These are generally fairly host-specific, only on a single plant, species of plant, or a few species. One plant would be, what, monophagous?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's a narrow, or if they're on a few species of closely related?
It's not phytophagy, it's the.
It's oligo. Oligophagous is on just a few plants, a narrow host range. Some of these do cause the formation of galls on their host plant. Things like the hackberry galls are made by psyllids. And again, some can transmit diseases. So they are around here. We catch psyllids quite often. Probably they're just small and you overlook them, but I wouldn't be surprised if you guys have got some in your samples. Now we move in. Well, let's see. Not yet. Here we got the white flies, the family Alarodidae. White flies, they're easy to recognize, at least the wing forms, because as their name implies, their wings are kind of covered with a powdery white covering on them. Again, they're very small, 2 to 3 millimeters in length. Again, wings opaque, covered with a whitish powder. In general, the wings are similar size and shape. I mean, you can see the hind ones are a little bit smaller, but in general, they're close to the same size and shape. These only have 2 ocelli. Remember, the last family had 3. These lack cornicles, so they don't have the cornicles that are seen in the aphids. Here, the antennae are usually 7-segmented. Get them the last, the psyllids, it was usually 10. They kind of lay their eggs on stalks. That's what this picture right here, B on your handout, is an egg with a little stalk. The first instars are active moving insects, crawl around, and then the later instars become more sedentary, non-mobile, until they get to the adult stage, and then you have at least the males. They also, the last couple of mature stages don't feed and are more quiet or quiescent, almost resembling a pupal stage. The wing pads do develop externally, though, like we see in the rest of the groups with gradual metamorphosis. And again, there's some pests, some of the greenhouse plants especially, or indoor plants, house plants and things. So, now we're going to talk about several families of aphids. And the big common one is the aphididae, or the aphididae. Sometimes you'll see it written. Mm-hmm. But this contains most of the common aphids that you're familiar with. Most of these do have cornicles. There can be some exceptions, but you can see the tube like structures coming off the posterior end. Wings are membranous. They don't have the white powder that we saw in the white flies. These are generally, the wings are held roof-like over their backs. These usually have an RS vein. This upper right-hand corner, you can see it labeled there, but the R vein and then this RS coming off. And then the M vein tends to be several branched. You see the M vein having, in that example, have three branches. And the hind wings are usually much smaller than the front wings. These are soft-bodied, kind of pear-like. The antennae are usually six-segmented. Tarsi two-segmented. Again, these can build up large numbers. You'll see colonies of aphids. There are some aphid species that have a soldier cast, or some individuals that tend to protect the colony. They're a little bit larger. Sometimes they've got enlarged front legs. Sometimes they have a little horn or something on their head that they'll bump intruders and stuff. So,
I didn't think about that being a possibility. I just thought of them as
kind of a weird, an unusual thing to have some individuals that may act more like soldiers. And it's kind of, we talk about altruism sometimes and altruistic behavior, and this appears to be an altruistic behavior because they don't participate in reproduction or the next generation. They're just there to help the others in the colony.
So if it's semi-social, they're
not really in the true sense of the word. You don't have females helping raise the young of other females. That's the true sociality. I don't know. I guess having some individuals that help guard or protect the colony would be maybe a very primitive or loosely defined sociality of some type, but it's not true sociality. Are you familiar with the life cycles of aphids?
They're really weird.
They are actually weird. I do know that, let me think here. It's... Viva something, as well as parthenogenic. This is...
You've heard, you know what I mean, you've heard the term alternation of generations.
Mm-hmm, yeah. These things,
it's all coming, going to come back. Well, I'd say they got fancy names for all these things, the fundatrix, and I don't have you know all those.
I'm trying to remember this because
ovipary, sexual para. No, what happens is they overwinter as eggs, mm-hmm, on what we would call their primary host plant. Early in the spring, the eggs hatch. And you have a generation of wingless females, and they will then reproduce parthenogenetically several more generations of wingless females. Until you get late in the spring and early summer, then you get a generation of winged females. And the winged females will then fly from that primary host plant to a different host plant and start reproducing there parthenogenetically. And again, you'll have several generations of wingless females. Then late in the summer, all of a sudden you get a generation of winged males and females. And both the males and females then fly back to the primary host plant where they mate and lay the eggs for the eggs to overwinter again. And it seems like oftentimes that primary host plant is kind of a woody tree type species, and the secondary host plant's more of a herbaceous plant, but that's not always true. You have a couple handouts. There is a handout that illustrates the life cycle of an aphid and also an areosomatid, and it's kind of going through that alternation of generations. So you have a number of generations of parthenically produced apterous females or females, and then you'll have a generation of winged ones. And as I said, they have names for all of these. Primary host plant, vivipari, fundatrix, oviparous, sexuals, which again, I don't expect you to know all those, but it would be, I think, good for you to remember the alternation of generations and that they have two host plants moving from one to the other. And you have the several generations of wingless females, and then all of a sudden at the end of the summer you have the both males and females.
How do they generate birth the males with parthenogenesis?
I don't know the mechanics behind it or how it all...
Yeah.
I think I remember one of my teachers saying that it's just something in their genes that activates based on temperature or something along those lines. But I don't know either, to be fair. I think Ryan actually might know a bit more about that than I do.
So anything, again, aphids is an important group, lots of economically important species, a very interesting group. And that's, I haven't noticed the big flights. Probably the numbers aren't that great when they're going from primary to secondary host plants. But late in the fall, you get the right temperature and settings, you see aphids flying everywhere. So some of those migrations can be large. The next aphid family is the Areosomatidae, which are these are the woolly aphids or the gulf-forming aphids. These tend to lack cornicles. The cornicles will either be very small and indistinct or they'll be completely lacking. A lot of these do exude wax from their posterior part of their bodies. Now, this handout. In North American species, that M vein is unbranched. And almost all the examples on here, I think, come from the Old World. It's only this lower one down here you can see the unbranched M vein. The other two winged ones you see on this handout there, Areosomatids, the M vein is branched. But I think those are Old World species. So media vein not branched, U.S. species only, usually with a large amount of wax glands. Antennae are usually six-segmented. The sexuals, the males and female generation, are usually non-feeding. This one, the sexuals, the females, only lay one egg. Oviparous produce only a single egg. Again, generally the primary host is a tree or shrub, while the secondary host is a herbaceous plant. Some of these do produce galls. When they do produce galls, it's only on the primary plant. And then, like I said, there's a handout that kind of shows the life cycles, kind of as I went through it. We're going to talk about another family of aphids, or the Adelgidae, which are the pine and spruce aphids. In these, there's only three veins that reach the wing margin. There is no RS vein, just the R vein, and then two, there's a CU1 and a CU2. So only three veins. The RS vein is lacking. So the R vein goes on out, and then the CU1 and the CU2. These, the antennae, are only 3 to 5 segmented. And actually, the wingless parthenogenic females have 3 segments. The sexuals, the ones that are mating and producing eggs, have 4 segments. And then there's some winged parthenogenetic females that have 5 segments. These also lack the cornicles, so no cornicles. My notes say all of these species are confined to the northern hemisphere except one. There's one species in the southern hemisphere. These also have alternate hosts, like we just talked about, but in all cases, both the primary and secondary hosts are conifers, with the primary host always being spruce. So primary and secondary hosts both are conifers of some kind, with the primary always spruce.
These are galling insects, correct?
Some of the area somatids did. Many produce galls. Yep, I do have it in there. So some of these, they overwinter as nymphs. So they get to the primary host, and the eggs will go ahead and hatch, and they'll actually overwinter as the nymphs. And then one more family we should talk about is the Phylloxeridae. The Phylloxeridae are commonly called the phylloxerans.
What am I looking at here?
Well, and I should have mentioned real quick. I mean, I showed it. Those CU1 and CU2 veins don't come together. So they're separate the whole way. Whereas in the phylloxerans, they're what they call stalked. But again, you still only have 3 veins, but now the CU1 and the CU2 come together and have a joint base. So, forewing with CU1 and CU2 stalked. These hold their wings more or less flat over the back. The antennae are 3 segmented. Again, no cornicles. I didn't really mention it, but a lot of the aphid groups, again, like some of the earlier groups, do exude honeydew. You'll see ants tending in some of the ant colonies in that. This family does not usually exude honeydew. Again, they also have complex life histories like the aphids do. This is the one we talk about, the grape phylloxeran. You've heard the story about the grape phylloxerin.
Grape, okay.
When it gets on grapes. And the European varieties of grapes were highly susceptible to the grape phylloxerin. And in fact, this insect just about wiped out the European wine industry. But the American varieties were resistant. And so I think that was, it was C.V. Riley, famous economic entomologist, but he's the one who came up with the idea of grafting American variety stock onto the European and saved the European wine industry. So,
haven't they been highly resistant to our assistance in Greece?
The Europeans?
Yeah.
I don't know. This is way back, like the 19th century, late 1800s, so. I know they tend to be a little more anti-GMO stuff, and when everything seems like they want things more organic and that, then so. But again, an important species, the grape phylloxera, rarely damaging to American grape species where it may form galls. The species was devastating for the European wine industry in the 19th century. Problem was solved through the suggestion of C.V. Riley, who, by grafting resistant American rootstocks onto the European plants. And so that's that. Then all that's really left to talk about fairly quickly is, again, all the scale insects. There's lots of scale families. And they can be kind of difficult, although each different family, sometimes they have characteristic shapes. There's the oyster shell scales, and but I'm not going to go through all the different families. You might want to read in your text through some of the different families in that. The females are wingless and usually legless and non-moving, sessile. The males, on the other hand, have one pair of wings. The hind pair of wings are kind of reduced into these little halter structures. The males often have these bristles coming out the posterior end of the body. Like I said, the hind pair of wings are just a little small halter-like. This is another group where the first instars are active, mobile insects. They find a place, a good place to live. They're called crawlers. They actually have a name. They're called crawlers. Males, again, only have a single pair of wings, sometimes wingless. They lack mouth parts and do not feed. The abdomen terminates in one or two long style-like processes. The hind wings are halter-like. Again, they can have a fairly complex life cycle. First instars active, called crawlers. After the first molt, then they lose their legs and ability to move around. And females stay under. They exude a waxy covering over them. The scale. Again, there's some of the later instars, immature instars are more quiescent, non-feeding, all, again, starting to resemble a pupal stage. But the wings develop externally, so it's still like gradual metamorphosis. And like I said, I think Jerry provided you with some handouts so you can see some of the different kinds of scales, but that's all I'm really going to say about them for right now. Oh, I was going to say, I do often do mention that the guy that taught taxonomy at Auburn University when I was there was a scale expert. and some of his talks. And sometimes it's hard to make a systematic talk real riveting and interesting, but the scale ones, I mean, their typical thing they would do is have a slide with a scale picture on it, and it'd be cut down the middle, so half of it would be dorsal view and half of it would be ventral view. But then they would go through and talk about, this one has three hairs here and two hairs there, and then the next one, this one has four hairs here and five there, and just slide after slide of. So anyway, that's where I guess I got my aversion to learning scale families, at least for this class, was through that. But so anyway, I will stop.